Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, coaching, and overall mental well-being. I've been in esports for quite my life, previously competing in COD 4 Pro Mod and coaching StarCraft 2, whilst avidly loving CSGO and all FPSs. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite-level gaming. This includes getting an insight from coaches, players, staff, org founders, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I chat with Michael Gredesar, who is a clinical and sleep psychologist, sleep scientist, and teaches master's and PhD students at Flinders University. I hope this episode serves as a learning tool for esports performance coaches and clubs looking to further understand sleep, especially for cognitive performance. Michael and I chat about traveling and jet lag, and what this looks like for players competing on the same day, circadian rhythm and supplementation, burnouts, sleep schedules, sleep monitoring, and commercially available wearables. And finally, Michael shares some insights from his previous research with South Korean teams and what is known as a hikikomori culture of social isolation where players are committed to the grind. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mind Clickers Season 2, Episode 10, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined here today by professor and sleep expert, Michael Gredesar, whose work consists of being a sleep scientist, sleep psychologist, and also teaching master's and PhD students on the side. How are you going today?
Yeah, pretty good. So far, so good. How about you?
Yeah, really good. I'm glad we finally got the opportunity to jump on, have a big conversation today. Really passionate about that kind of esports scene, alongside kind of that sleep parameter and how that can be really implemented for a lot of esports athletes. So I think what we'll start off today is just a little bit of an introduction about yourself, some of your work clinically, and then some of your work in terms of esports as well.
Yeah, sure. So I stumbled into the sleep research area back in 1998. Because, you know, at my university, we had a professor called Leon Lack, who had been one of the forerunners when it came to sleep and insomnia and circadian rhythms, like the body clock. So it was hard to escape, you know, going through your degree and not having some sort of input about sleep. And you know, when I graduated, I was like looking for some work, and he had some work going in his sleep laboratory looking at circadian rhythms and napping. And I just found that from there, I started then to do a PhD in the area. And then after a while, Leon basically said, you know, he's got an insomnia clinic that was off-site if I wanted to work there. And so I fumbled my way through that. So I've been working with people with insomnia for like 20 years. And it's not just insomnia and relevant to esports as well. It's also circadian rhythm issues as well, and learning how to sort of fix those for people. And then managed to land a job at Flinders. It happened to be in what they call clinical child psychology, so I had to sort of like look at pediatrics, which was 18 years and under. And one of the first natural things to do was to say, okay, I've been working with adults, let's just go to the next generation down, look at teenagers. And so been doing a lot of research initially with adolescent sleep, and then naturally that went into like gaming and sleep and technology use in sleep. And then been doing research in that sort of field for about 10 years, and then the opportunity really came along to go, okay, let's look at the pinnacle. Let's look at esports and see what happens when you are professionally paid, or you're trying to get professionally paid to do this for a living. What is your sleep like? So, yeah, that's where we're at now.
Definitely. Did you think that when you started to get into looking at sleep that you would end up here looking at research esports as well?
I don't think esports was invented back then. and I guess, you know, there was a real classic study back in 2005 done in Japan where they were looking at people coming in, young adults coming into their sleep lab, and they were either playing a video game versus mental arithmetic and seeing the effects on the physiology and their ability to sleep. And it was such a unique study back then. No one was really probably thinking about that, thinking it wasn't really sort of research, you know. But there was a big flaw with that particular study, because they got these young people to go to bed almost like 2 hours later. And as soon as you do that, people start to feel really sleepy. So it's not really, it was a bit sort of cloudy. You couldn't understand what was going on. And then I'd always had that in the back of my mind, thinking, you know, it'd be great to do a study where, you know, you just put people to bed at the usual sort of time, get them to play a video game in the classic hour before bed, and get some sort of other condition that you can compare it to that's audiovisual. So like watching, you know, like something like a documentary or TV, and then just got the opportunity to do it. And so back in 2008, we got teenagers to come into our sleep lab, got them to play Call of Duty 4. That was the, you know, the big game back then. And got them to either do that on one night or come in on another night and watch or listen to Morgan Freeman talk about penguins in March of the Penguins.
Right.
About a third of them fell asleep watching these penguins running. Well, they weren't running around that much. But, you know, we did all of the things we were hoping to do to improve that Japanese study. We were measuring sleep with EEG, which is the classic, you know, best way to do it. And we got these teenagers to play it in the hour before bed, and it only took them 4 minutes longer to fall asleep compared to watching Morgan. And to us, it was like, wow, okay, we weren't expecting that. We thought this interaction and action would be stimulating. You know, we measured heart rate. We couldn't see any differences there as well. And so it really then was like, oh, okay, well, that, I thought it was just common sense if you play a video game before sleep that, you know, it's going to take longer to fall asleep. So what's going on? And that's just meant that we just kept doing studies one after another to work out what's going on.
Yeah, I like that. You kind of had that kind of baseline study that you could take and kind of draw different things from it. And then that kind of leads into different future research as well. That's really awesome. In regards to sleep schedules, they're a big thing that's driven nowadays that you have to stick to a consistent sleep schedule, you know, for everyone, not gamers, not athletes, pretty much everyone, to try and set that baseline level of sleep, whether it be, you know, 7 to 9 hours, 8 hours. How important is a sleep schedule? And, you know, what are the main benefits of actually being able to stick to a sleep schedule that can have on everyday life as well?
Yeah, yeah. I would say it's hugely important. Like one phrase that I often say is that sleep loves structure. And so, yes, it is definitely important to be able to have especially regular times that you wake up. And that's what has been happening, you know, prior to, say, 2020. We have been having like 5 days a week, usually woken up by alarm, getting up, doing the same sort of routine. And then on the weekends, you know, that routine changes. We might want to sleep in for a bit. And, you know, that should be totally okay to do it because, you know, going back many years, they were sort of saying, in general, what are the things that bring you pleasure in life? And sleeping in is actually one of the top ones. So we really shouldn't be denying people that pleasure, but at the same time, knowing the limits, like usually you shouldn't sort of sleep in for longer than 2 hours longer than you usually would on a weekday. So that's almost like a bit of a safety zone to sort of try to have that schedule. And in terms of at night, we just do so many different things leading up to bedtime that we can be sort of feeling different, you know, in terms of our alertness level. So I sort of talk about a bedtime window. So rather than saying you need to fall asleep at 11 o'clock, you might be sort of 10:30 to 11. You know, just have that sort of zone where you think you might start to feel a bit sleepy. But another way to answer your question is what happens when you take away structure? And the worst case scenario at our sleep clinic is that when you see, and this has happened definitely for older teenagers and some young adults, is that when their sleep pattern has got so bad that they can't go to school, they can't get a job, then what happens is that they end up going to their bedrooms. They're not really even like coming out of their bedrooms to sort of interact with the family. They're almost like in a cave, and the sleep pattern has got absolutely shocking. Like it's called free running disorder. They essentially go to bed later and later every day, and they can't hold down anything, and their life and their mental health really starts to go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I can really relate to that kind of cave metaphor. I know in Japan it's kind of big, the culture over there, especially the hikikomori culture or the NEET, not in education or training, where, you know, people over there are sometimes often secluded from society. They kind of lock themselves in their bedroom. They only, you know, do gaming or they only watch their different shows. They're completely drawn back from society. And, you know, what kind of mental health problems is that kind of causing? It's a big topic. Especially in esports as well. And you mentioned students as well. You know, obviously with students, there's going to be different kind of windows, as you said. You know, some students are maybe going to be better performing at nighttime. They'll stay up a bit later, being able to have that kind of leverage, that window where some students might work more efficiently, be like a night owl, for example, versus students who sleep earlier and then like to wake up a little bit earlier as well. I think it's crucial, especially when we look at esports athletes, that within today's traditional culture, there's a bigger emphasis on the grind. So, you know, staying up for longer periods of time and then waking up maybe later in the day, and kind of just throwing everything off balance, you know, one day sleeping at maybe 8 p.m., the next day sleeping at like 4 a.m. You know, how much of a big disparity and impact that can that have on some of these athletes' cognitive functioning?
Yeah, exactly. You've hit the nail on the head, because it is a balance. Like, you need to eventually get sleep, because sleep is like your reset button. It's your way to recover so you can be okay the next day. And in so many different ways, it's not just your cognitive performance. It's also your emotional regulation. If you don't get good sleep, then you're not preparing yourself for any emotional event the next day. And if you got, like, say, for instance, if you're coming up to a comp, you are going to struggle to sleep that night before that. But obviously leading up to that, the week before that, you want to be able to try to at least get some good sleep. At the same time, though, you want to be able to get as much practice in as possible. And, you know, this is what some of the data that we've collected so far shows, that, you know, at that sort of elite level, especially like in South Korea, they are absolutely, like, it's everything is about the practicing. Like, it's so hard to even, like, you know, get them to eat or shower or go to the gym, get out of bed. You know, it's pretty much just go from bed to the computer and then back to bed. And, you know, as such, what I think a lot of people will notice as their own scientist, their own experimenter, is that, yes, I do the grind more, I get better at it. So I'll make sacrifices, and sleep is definitely one of them. It's a question of how much you push it. How much can you find that balance between being able to do that grind, knowing when to sort of stop and to say, yes, I've got enough here. I'm not necessarily going to get the best benefit for every extra 15 minutes or so, but I can get extra benefit from getting sleep. That's really a crucial thing. And I think it always boils down to, like, when people make a change, they'll make a change because something is painful, something's not going right. So when they notice that their performance is not going so great, who knows what they're going to maybe attribute it to. But one thing they can think about is, maybe it's because I'm not getting enough sleep here. You know, I'm finding that I'm lapsing a bit. I'm not making the right sort of decisions. I'm not thinking as clearly as I usually would.
Yeah, for sure. I know after speaking with a couple of traditional teams over here in Oceania and NA, especially with players, one of the biggest things to try and get over is ambivalence, that kind of feeling that they need to sleep, but then they don't go ahead and sleep. The acknowledgement of having, you know, sleeping a little bit earlier will prepare myself for tomorrow's games. But then, you know, staying up late, having that kind of focus, wanting to, as you said, chip in, you know, the extra couple of 10, 15 minutes, one more game leads to another game, and that kind of continuing that can kind of be detrimental, especially for health. So I think one of the biggest things that I've had a chat with a couple of players is starting to try and get coaches buy-in in regards to sleep and starting to help that acknowledgement. How do you think we can start to get this buy-in? Is it more so presenting the data, presenting the research to some of these teams? Is it more so showing previous examples of teams who have adopted sleep schedules, who have adopted, you know, maybe, for example, wearables where the coaches can look back at their sleep patterns and start to say, hey, you know, these guys are doing this, maybe we should start to do it as well?
Yeah. I think that's you've hit the nail on the head. And that's what we're hoping for in the next coming year, is that not only are we starting to present data from different teams about what their sleep is looking like and correlating that with particular issues, like, say, for instance, you know, there's a massive link between how long they are grinding and the timing of their sleep and depression. And if you're starting to suffer from depression symptoms, I mean, depression is really lowering your arousal system, besides the fact that it's making you feel like shit. So you want to be able to have as better peak performance as possible. And sure, you might try to mask that, you know, with caffeine and all that sort of stuff. But underlying that, you've got this biological reason why you are starting to come down. And that's not even just purely because of the sleeplessness issue. But I think what'll be really cool is the stuff that we're going to be coming out with, which is our sleep intervention work, and looking at the sort of before and after and the way that we've been able to try to address some of these sleep issues in the players. And it will be interesting. We should have data on about 50 to 60 players. And at the same time, that might mask, like the average might mask what we have seen individually. So some of them, you know, they've got crap sleep and they just don't pay attention, you know, when we're going in and trying to sort of educate them. And like you said, you know, the coaches are really important as well, like trying to sort of get that buy-in. They actually understand, and they're the key to really mediating us as sleep interventionists and trying to be able to improve their sleep. But at the same time, there's also, you know, those individual players that really do take this seriously, and they might not necessarily have the worst sleep. They might sort of just think, yeah, I need to do whatever I can in order to improve my well-being, my mental health, my sharpness, my cognitive performance to be able to play the best. And I think those guys and girls are really going to be the ones that are going to start to lead and improve, because, you know, this is what we've seen, I guess, in the physical sports, the traditional sports, is that everyone started to get really good and it was hard to distinguish between people. So what do you have to do just to get that extra edge? And something like, you know, what we have as a tagline sometimes is every millisecond counts. And definitely if you ain't getting enough sleep or if your body clock is right out of whack, you are missing out on milliseconds, and those milliseconds are going to add up eventually.
Definitely. Do you think that in some situations it could be a problem in regards to resources? You know, some teams or some players or some organizations don't have the resources to, I guess, invest into guys, and maybe having people like yourself or other sleep researchers come out and maybe explain like the importance of sleep, maybe not the resources to invest in something like a Fitbit or, you know, a wearable to sleep at night, just because they are so focused on ensuring you know, that money spent elsewhere.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where it is, you know. There are some teams that are just up and coming and they don't have the extra finances to be able to pay someone like us, you know. But it will get to a point when they do realize, okay, we can provide some sort of token amount for like a one-off session. And that's usually what we try to do. You might not necessarily get the individual tailored interventions for this sleep, but you might sort of get like a group presentation, which will say, okay, these are some of the quick tips that you can do in order to try to manage your sleep. And that at least sort of provides a little bit more bang for your buck when it comes to a team and coaches and so forth that want to be able to sort of say, yeah, we want to just have some sort of influence here, start to get into this. You know, admittedly, there's been some pro bono work that we've done initially because, you know, we want to also, our currency is data. So we've been trying to get data to understand what's going on. Yep. But at the same time, you know, you've got those other high level groups that we've been playing with, the other teams who do have the funds. They definitely have the funds. And they are investing in that because, you know, globally they are interested in the well-being of their players. You know, they are creating the gyms, the headquarters for their players to come to, and, you know, us going to them and being able to provide that sort of sleep education and techniques that are evidence-based. That's the crucial thing. I think that's going to be the cool thing, is that once we sort of not only provide our entire package but find out what elements, what components and what techniques are the best ones, that are the quick ones that can actually provide a lot of benefit for the sleep for these players.
Yeah, definitely agree. I think, as you said earlier, as you mentioned, that kind of 1%, you know, we will have those professional, you know, tier one teams who will have the resources, they will have the backing, they will have the investment opportunities to kind of get on in regards to allied health professionals, whether that be a physiotherapist, whether it be a sports psychologist, a sleep researcher, starting to come in and provide that kind of support for some of these players. But then again, you know, you just take a step down, like a waterfall, for example. You have the tier one teams, then you just take a step down to semi-pros, to amateurs, to kind of, you know, the bottom line. And those kind of semi-pros will get to a spot eventually where they will have to start adopting some of these kind of external benefits, whether it be looking at exercise, whether it be looking at nutrition, to try and make that opportunity to get into the top tier. So I think it is a matter of time. We have seen such a rampant growth in recent years in terms of esports growth, you know, so much exponential growth within the last 5 years. So I think it's just a matter of time before more opportunities start for some of these teams that that can start to get that support, which is pivotal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I guess we've probably seen it, for instance, you know, in Aussie rules football, you know, like it was very much about the physical sort of elements to it. And then eventually, I think it was Sheedy back in maybe the 90s that was saying, you know, like if you want to get the extra benefit, you've got to start to look at every single other aspect of it. And you're talking about someone that was really, you know, putting that layer of intelligence on top of the physical and mm-hmm. was succeeding because of that sort of attitude. And that's where you started to see, so for instance, some psychology. And I think the whole well-being movement and the wellness movement that we've seen in the last 5 years has really raised awareness about, like I say, nutrition, being able to get physical activity, and sleep is also one of those aspects to it. And they're all sort of interrelated. Like we do research on physical activity and sleep, and it's very clear that, you know, you increase your physical activity, but it does depend upon the dose, the type of activity and the timing of it, and you will get benefits in sleep as well. So there's a whole range of different things that you can do to improve that. And it's really when obviously coaches are going to be probably the first point of contact when they actually realize, yeah, I need to sort of like look into this and start to investigate how we can sort of do this for our players.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you raise an interesting point in regards to traditional sports. I do think there is a lot that can be borrowed from traditional sports. You know, traditional sports have essentially led the way. And I think esports, what they can do now is essentially just pick apart the things that worked. They can ignore what went wrong. They can ignore that kind of time spent on what didn't work out. And they can kind of just start to steal the important, critical, valuable information that has paved the way for traditional sports in terms of well-being, in terms of, you know, physical health, in terms of developing that essential quality of life.
Definitely, definitely. And it's really fantastic to have them as pathfinders for this sort of area as well. I mean, in some ways, you know, we're not talking about the physical element here. We're really talking about this cognitive element, like you mentioned in the past. And certainly it's interesting, like when you start to deprive people of sleep on a chronic basis night after night, that's when you'll start to see the cognitive elements start to decline the quickest. And the quickest or the most sensitive part is reaction times. Reaction times are the stuff that really starts to drop off. So this is when people have to be really mindful about, you know, I really need to do something here in order to be able to get the best benefit for my performance.
Definitely. And I guess going on that kind of lack of sleep, that lack of quality sleep as well, could essentially fast track burnouts. You know, esports players, you know, sometimes only rostered on for very short periods in comparison to traditional sports. You know, traditional sport athletes, you know, usually have a roster of, you know, maybe a year to 2 years. But in regards to esports, people can be switched out so rapidly. And it's one of those things where longevity for some of these players' careers isn't always there. So I think if you aren't focusing on the sleep, you aren't kind of having, you know, a nice kind of schedule or at you aren't having a schedule or at least being mindful of the importance of sleep, it could potentially fast track burnouts.
Absolutely. You know, we're seeing some of this, you know, without naming names, in some of the top players. They're certainly finding it a real struggle. And I guess it's not just sleep. It's everything. It's almost like the inverse. It's like how much can they pack in their day? They've got to get all of these things done. And, of course, you know, sleep's at the end of that. You know, whether it's like trying to work out, making sure they're in touch with their social media circles and their fans and so forth, and keeping that sort of up, and being able to, like you say, sort of do the grind, etc. So it's really a case of trying to be able to have a moment, if you can, just to reflect. I think that's the key thing, is reflecting on your performance and what sort of things you can change, and certainly bouncing that off someone who's experienced in this. Like coaches are a great source of sort of feedback and a sounding board to sort of say, yeah, you know, this is what I'm experiencing. And I think probably maybe that's where we need to target first, is the coaches.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that being able to have accessibility to some of these coaches, the, you know, managers, the kind of player directors, is pivotal in regards to kind of promote that change. Yeah. In regards to traveling, it's a big one, especially in regards to NA and NU. Not so much here in Australia, as the time differences aren't too pivotal, unless we're talking about, you know, maybe a team going from, you know, Sydney to Worlds, for example. Obviously, the time differences would be quite extravagant there. However, you know, in EU and NA, you know, a lot of teams have to travel, whether it be from one side of this, you know, country to the other. So there's going to be a time difference. What sort of impacts is jet lag, as per se, going to have on someone's sleep, whether it be impacting their circadian rhythm, whether it be impacting how much quality sleep they get as well?
Yeah, and this is the actual reason I got into esports, because I remember I was on a plane and I was watching a documentary ages ago, and I was looking at the Americans versus the South Koreans. And when I was thinking about this and seeing that the fact that, you know, they're obviously training in their own countries, but then, you know, they'll go over to the other country. And I'm like, damn. And of course, I was in a plane, so I'm thinking about this sort of thing. And yep. I was like, oh, this is really an area where something has to change. And I've been already starting to think about getting into that whole assisting sports with being able to manage their jet lag. You know, that's part of circadian rhythms. And but I was just thinking about, you know, which sort of sports to do that. And then when I saw this, I was like, this is perfect. You know, these guys really need this. And it's reasonably easy to explain, because if you understand the body clock and a circadian rhythm, we have a major peak and a major trough of everything, like your alertness, sleepiness, body temperature, appetite, and reaction times. So if you are in one particular time zone and you obviously have your own body clock timing within that time zone, you're going to have a certain peak of your performance, your reaction time, decision-making skills, and a low point there. And so if you are traveling to another country, you have to be almost like planning ahead. And this is probably where coaches can come in, is to understand, okay, so when I travel to that country, where is my peak performance? Where is my minimal performance? And where does that sit in relation to the training when I'm over there, but also the comp? Right. And, you know, the only true way, I guess, that we measure circadian rhythms is to do some what we would call objective tests to be able to work that out. But you can sort of have an estimate, and that's what we do, working with people and finding out with certain questionnaires and diaries, and you can do it with wearables as well, is to find out where is their peak performance, where's their minimal performance. And so I think this is definitely an area, I guess we're not seeing it so much now, which has been fascinating, where we can work with teams. And if we sort of can find out where a particular player's body clock is situated at in their hometown, and know where their destination is going to be, know what the timing of these comps are going to be, we can actually form a plan and be able to say, okay, this is what you need to do in the lead up before you go traveling. When you're on the plane, this is what you do. When you get there, this is what you do. And that's certainly some, you know, I've done that sort of work with Swimming Australia, for example, when they were traveling from Brisbane to Los Angeles for some of their comps as well. And it really, this isn't something that necessarily people in the well-being space can do. You really have to understand circadian rhythms. And, you know, someone like myself has been measuring those, you know, in 2002. So I understand how it works. And in working with teenagers, there's a group out of anyone in terms of age group that have body clock issues. It's just a normal thing that they go through. And we're actually talking about esports players that are in that zone. They're more likely to have an issue with the body clock already. So I think, again, it comes down to coaches being aware of these sorts of issues and really teaming up with the people that have that experience, that sort of understand circadian rhythms and jet lag, but also know what you can do to sort of change those. And usually when we're trying to change those, we will use something like melatonin, and that's not a straightforward thing. You just don't go and get any sort of melatonin. You have to know what type it is, how many milligrams, when you take it for that individual. And also bright light therapy. And again, you need to have certain bright light sources and be able to time that for that particular individual.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting area, because in some cases, in terms of, you know, NA or EU, traveling is essential. It's inevitable. I think I've seen it. I've read prior a couple of teams, you know, starting to adopt, you know, hey, we're going to be training, we're going to be competing at this time in NA, so let's start to practice around that kind of same time, whether it be maybe even late at night, starting to try and build that kind of tolerance to ensure when they make their transition, when they change that time zone, that they still are trying to try and tick those peak performance boxes. And I definitely think it's an interesting area. How about, say, for example, if we don't have that ability to kind of do that and players are landing, competing, flying back all in the same day, surely that's going to be such a cognitive stress for some of these athletes. It's going to be so much pressure to try and land, try and focus, okay, you know, try and wrap everything up and try and just get it all done.
Yeah, in so many different ways. I mean, to take an extreme, like when, for instance, I'm going over to the States for a week, there's no point really in me trying to change my body clock, because by the time I go over there, it's going to take a while for me to sort of change my body clock, say, for instance, when I go to Florida. And then when I'm coming back, it's going to take still a while for me to get back into the zone in Australia. So what I inevitably end up doing is nothing, because it's just so short. But it's bloody painful, I'll tell you. It's like when you're over there, I'm staring at the ceiling at 4 o'clock in the morning and have to get up at 7 a.m. to go to a conference. You know, and this is probably something similar to what these guys have to do as well. They'll probably get a real lack of sleep because their body clock's really out of whack. And, you know, that was my experience the second time I went over to the States. And then the third time I was like, okay, well, I'll do 3 days of preparation over here, like based upon what the science says. When I'm over there, I'll use, say, for instance, melatonin light therapy just to do a slight adjustment, see if it's just less painful. And certainly it, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it certainly was a lot better. And it just meant just a small modification when I came back and getting into the zone here. So it's one of those things, like depending upon how far you travel and you know, from Adelaide to Florida, it's a bloody long way. And it's also, you know, in terms of like the difference in the body clock and when you have to be awake and perform is quite long. But it was a nice, I guess, self-experiment to sort of show that you can either go, okay, it's more important when I come back, so I've got to not change my body clock. But it's really important when I'm there, I've got to make whatever changes I can and just suffer the consequences when I get back and rest and recoup.
Yeah, right. Gotcha. How about you mentioned melatonin, so obviously supplementation, definitely key and crucial in regards to maybe some like traditional sports. If we look to esports, maybe, you know, some of these coaches might not be well versed in this kind of area. They might even start to think, hey, maybe you just take some sleeping tablets, or maybe just take some sort of external supplement to maybe make you sleep faster. Is this going to have a big impact? What are the dangers in regards to this, in regards to players who have to play on the same day, for example?
Yeah, and I guess it's really important to make that distinction between something like melatonin. Well, firstly, to make the distinction about what melatonin is used for. So sometimes, in fact, it's written on the labels, and you know, you're sort of mentioning coaches might not be aware of it or educated about it. Like GPs, we find, like, you know, family doctors don't understand even how it works. That they can understand the pharmacokinetics about it and the interactions potentially, but they don't know how to administer it. And this is just the fascinating thing to me. Obviously, we've gone and delved in the science. We've been putting it into practice, like, say, for instance, when we use it with teenagers or people who are trying to overcome jet lag. So, again, it's going to have to be coaches being educated about this. And this is also something that can happen in a particular session, you know, a one-off session, educating a team about it. But basically, melatonin is not used to help you fall asleep. It's really used to help change your body clock. That's the key message that has to sort of get out there. Sometimes people will read the labels and it'll say, take it 30 minutes before bedtime. You know, that's just stupid. It just doesn't work. People just don't understand it. And there's different sort of types of melatonin. So, for instance, you can get sustained release melatonin. That's really used for older people to help them stay asleep. But you're looking for the ones that are really short acting. So in other words, these are ones that are going to give a signal to the body clock to say, this is when we should be asleep. And the crucial thing is being able to time that for that particular individual when they are trying to change their body clock, whether they're trying to change their body clock within the same time zone or trying to go to another time zone. And I guess what you find in the traditional sports is, because of all of the, the concerns about doping and all that sort of stuff, I think there's been a bit of a blanket rule even over melatonin, whether you can use that. Now, I'm not completely au fait with whether that sort of similar issue for melatonin has come into the esports arena. But if you're taking short-acting melatonin, you don't have it by the morning. You know, you should have most of that out of your system. So it can actually be quite a useful supplement to help you. And, you know, it's available on the shelves over in the States. Since the 1970s, if there was a problem with it, we'd know. People would be suing each other. When it comes to sleep medications, that's a completely different kettle of fish. You know, they can be abused. They can build up tolerance so that they need to have more to get the same desired effect. And then that leads to dependence. And the other thing people aren't aware of is that with some of those sleep medications, what happens is if you're having a course of those and then you stop, you're going to get what's called rebound insomnia. So you're staring at the ceiling. And then people get this belief, well, I need to have the sleeping tablet in order to sleep, rather than ride that wave of withdrawal and be able to then get back to what's called a homeostasis and get back to their normal sort of sleeping pattern. So, yeah, that's just the basic sort of separation between sleep medications and melatonin. So that's why I think melatonin has some potential in esports.
Yeah, fantastic. I can definitely, from that explanation, I can definitely understand how some people can kind of trip up, start to think that maybe using X can do Y, but essentially it doesn't do that. I definitely think it's crucial that, you know, we get on board, you know, whether it be an esports team, organization, to start to kind of have that widespread information. And, you know, you mentioned kind of that regulation, you know, something like WADA, for example, for traditional sports. Are we going to see something like that for esports? I know we have the Esports Integrity Commission, but I'm not too sure what they do in regards to supplementation and kind of that external kind of add-ons, those things that can be augmented onto performance. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see whether we have that kind of baseline level of this is allowed, this isn't allowed, and the reasonings behind that as well. And if people are going to start to maybe try and get away from that and try and slip under the ropes.
Exactly. And as long as it's evidence-based, and clearly, like, you know, what it should be set up for, so that it's fair, so that, you know, they're not playing an incredible advantage that is unfair. And but at the same time, you look at it, caffeine is one of the most consumed psychotropic drugs, and you know, a lot of people playing esports are using it.
Yeah, definitely. I know as well, I used to previously compete in Call of Duty 4 Pro Mod, and back then, you know, with that kind of FPS CSGO scene, one of the supplementations that was used was Adderall. So, you know, I read an article recently, you know, not many people talk about Adderall because everyone's on it. It's one of those things that's so easily accessible that can help, you know, kind of, you know, narrow you in and kind of, you know, try and establish that really hyper-focus essentially. And I think, you know, when we start to have that kind of adoption of these external supplements, you know, what are the dangers that's having? And you mentioned caffeine. You know, caffeine is one of those ones that's so easily accessible. It's promoted through, you know, whether it be, you know, like Twitch stream or YouTubers who actively kind of have that marketing background. We have, you know, kind of esports companies who are getting marketing sponsors in regards to caffeine. Players have caffeine so easily accessible. You know, they have, you know, caffeine, you know, Monster logos on the jerseys just to show that they're kind of partner with them and they're sponsored with them. So it's one of those things that, you know, is it going to help us with our performance? Is it going to help with our cognitive ability to kind of be in the zone for a longer while? What are your thoughts on caffeine and its use?
Yeah, I'm a bit biased because obviously I have it. at the same time, I think there is a role for it, definitely. You know, we're all going to always have some sort of problem sleeping. So we really need to find ways to be able to mitigate it sometimes. And, you know, like some of the research that I've been involved in has looked at, say, for instance, power naps. And definitely power naps will provide some benefits for about 3 hours after the nap compared to not having a nap. And, you know, likewise, caffeine can provide that improved alertness. That's what everyone understands when they go to consume it. But it really is, again, a case of, okay, so how much can you have? When can you have it? And when do you stop so that it doesn't have this flow-on effect and affect your sleep? And looking at the research, certainly, surprisingly, like if you look at the amount of caffeine that people are having during the day, that doesn't have a huge detrimental effect on their nighttime sleep, which really does go against the theory because, you know, caffeine has a half-life of, like, say, 4 to 6 hours, for instance. And so you can imagine if you're having 3 cups of coffee, you know, say, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock and even midday or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to have some caffeine when you go to bed in your system. Yep. And that's just those coffees. People don't understand that it's also in black tea, it's in green tea, it's in obviously cola, it's in chocolate. You know, I had one dude that sort of, I queried him about his caffeine use and he said, no, I don't drink coffee or tea. And I said, what about chocolate? And then his wife started to chuckle and he says, yeah, I have a block of dark chocolate after dinner every night. And I was like, do you know that's 4 or 5 espressos that you're having after dinner? And people aren't aware of that as well. So again, it's being educated about what you're putting into your body that can help with your alertness and performance, but also what detrimental effects you can get from that.
Yeah, definitely. It's a really good point that you bring up there, because obviously in regards to dosages, it's so easy to go overboard. It's so easy to, you know, not really understand how much milligrams of caffeine is in an energy drink, for example, especially if you're throwing back 4 or 5 during a practice session. Suddenly you're, you know, overdosing, maybe even on caffeine, for example. And, you know, what kind of detrimental effects is that going to have, whether it be physiologically, you know, an increased heart rate, you know, reduced focus because you're so, you know, maybe jittery, for example, you're sweating, that kind of cognitive kind of wow. You know, how can I kind of deal with that? And I think it's definitely an interesting area. It's an area that's so adopted into esports culture now. I think it's definitely one of those culture things that's been embedded into esports. And whether it be for good or bad, I'm not too sure, but how can we kind of deal with it? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a bit like the research that, you know, I've been doing over the last decade or so, looking at technology use and sleep. You know, there's been a lot of people condemning it. And like I told you about that original study, we're like, well, you know, if you told a teenager you can either watch a documentary about penguins or play COD for an hour, but if you play COD for an hour, you're going to take 4 minutes longer to fall asleep. It's pretty obvious what they're going to choose. And you know, and we've continued to do that. It's not just one study that's found this. It's been multiple studies. We're struggling to stuff up sleep with technology use. And one conclusion that we've come to is that people build up almost like a tolerance. The more sort of, like there's one study that was done in Sweden looking at gamer experience. Those that were more experienced actually found that their violent video game was their downer. There was the way for them to sort of relax. And a lot of people use this, you know, gaming to escape. Whereas, you know, the novice gamers that were exposed to a violent video game, those are the ones that reacted. They had that sort of increased heart rate variability and so forth. So it's a case of really understanding what line do you get to when it comes to harm, and how much can it help as well. And I think that's where our research is really moving towards, because we couldn't see these massive detrimental effects from gaming, for instance. We're going like, you know, how much can you push this? Even bright screens. Everyone keeps talking about the bright screens and the blue light that's emitted from screens, and they're trying to sort of give people these orange-tinted glasses. You know, the research that we published back in 2014, it was the first study to really look at that question. What happens if you shine a bright iPad screen in your face for an hour before bed compared to having, you know, one of these orange tints versus having a dim screen? And again, we didn't find that there was a difference in the time taken to fall asleep whether you had a bright iPad in front of your face versus a dim one. And there's been multiple studies that have actually confirmed that, yet that message is not getting out there. What has been shown on a reliable basis is, yes, those bright screens will suppress your own rise of melatonin, because you do have melatonin that basically gets emitted throughout your body, ideally when the sun goes down and it peaks around midnight. And that natural rise, it just decreases a bit. It doesn't completely go away with having a bright screen. But regardless of that happening, people still fall asleep fine when we've done these sort of studies. So it's, again, like trying to break through those myths and really look at the science and look at what people can do. It's okay to actually be in front of a screen for an hour before bed, whether it's playing a video game, whether it's having a bright screen. But you do need to be able to know what time it is, be aware of that, and know when to sort of shut down. That's what some of our new research is showing, is that there's been that interaction between what game developers are doing. They're trying to hook you in. You know, they're trying to sort of get you in the state of flow. You know, like as soon as something gets boring, they've got this AI that'll make it a lot more challenging. And if it's too challenging and you're ready to, you know, throw something at the screen, they'll make it slightly easier. They'll keep you in that zone, so you play for longer. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, something like this, and your viewers might not necessarily like to sort of look at this, but the social dilemma really hits the nail on the head. You know, technology use, it's there, it's great, it's fun, but they're trying to get us and control us and get us to do this stuff for longer. And I think that's what people have to be aware of, is when to shut off. That's a real key element. And you can still enjoy playing games. You can still enjoy your technology use at night.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there's some really good key takeaways there. I think that in regards to being able to have that shut off period, I think in traditional times now, we see the adoption of something like a Kindle, for example, in comparison to reading a book, being able to still have that screen though in your face. And then, obviously with the glasses, with the blue light tint glasses, Gunner gamers, they've kind of been adopted into esports culture as well, kind of to help prevent that kind of onset of the screen. And whether it has a big effect, I'm not too sure. But what I was really interested in, so you mentioned prior that 4 minute period. So, for example, we have our Call of Duty players and then we have the sleep, the people who watch the sleep. So they had that 4 minutes to sleep longer. But would that have any impact in regards to onset of waking? So would they sleep for a longer period if they were engaged in playing the game, or would they, sleep longer?
Well, I guess the key thing was the theory was suggesting if you are doing something that is stimulating before bedtime, then that stimulation is going to carry through into the period where you would usually fall asleep. So if you were going to lose any sleep, it was going to be at the start of the night, not necessarily at the end. It wasn't necessarily going to be a situation where you wake up more during the night or that you're going to wake up earlier. And so when we look at these studies, it's a case that if you are taking 4 minutes longer to fall asleep, that's bugger all. And for your international people, that means that's not much. But the case that you're not necessarily waking up for longer periods of time during the night, and you're not necessarily waking up earlier and constricting there. And I think that's a key thing, is that people are sort of just really seeing this gaming as being completely evil, just, off and on switch, this is what it is, but it's not. We can't find the evidence for that. If anything, it's really, there seems to be individual factors. And like I've mentioned, one of those is that if you are a person, and people vary on this, if you are a person that's more likely to get in that state of flow, you're more likely to keep gaming. And it's not necessarily because you're thinking about the grind completely. It's because you are of that nature that you just keep going and you just turn off later than another person. Another factor is whether you care about the consequences of taking risks. We found that teenagers that don't care about those consequences, when we give them a video game in our sleep lab and we say go for it, they're the ones that sort of shut off at 1 o'clock in the morning when we tell them, okay, you're going to school tomorrow, we have to actually stop this. And the other ones that do care about those consequences in general, they're the ones that switch off earlier and they get more sleep. So those are really the key ingredients there in terms of how much sleep you get, is that interaction between what you're doing and your personality. So the key thing is trying to be aware of your usual bedtime or your natural time to fall asleep, and learning strategies. Alarms could help, getting other people to tap you on the shoulder and say, this looks like this is the last game here, to be able to manage that.
Yeah, I really like that. So essentially, in hindsight, not one strategy or intervention fits all. It's a very individualized approach, whether someone falls asleep early or, as you mentioned, going into that flow state being a very powerful kind of zone that someone goes into, where their movements become almost autonomous. They're really hyper-focused in performing, and in those kind of zones, it's definitely hard to get someone off. I've definitely experienced that personally, when you're just on that kind of consistent, you're seeing the results that you want to see. It's almost as if, you're putting in those hours and everything's starting to suddenly pay off. It's definitely one of those interesting areas in sports psychology that's definitely a passion of mine as well. But in regards to kind of that research kind of basis, a question I had was in regards to something like subjective reporting. So, doing your diaries, doing your questionnaires versus, your objective measures. So having your wearables, your nearables. With your subjective questionnaires, have you ever had someone that's provided false information? Because I think one of the biggest things is I've talked with a couple of prior esports players and they've had kind of sports psychs come in and they've just said, well, I just guessed, I just overestimated, I just did it, and they were happy with it. They just thought I was telling the truth. And I think, when you have that kind of mindset, it can be very detrimental because all of a sudden, all the work that's gone into it can not be true.
Absolutely fantastic question, because I mean, this has been an issue that's been going around in sleep research for decades, and then clearly, that's something that we've been interested in. And then suddenly, you would think that the accessibility of something like Fitbit in 2007 that then garnered all of these other different sorts of wearables and hearables and made people more aware of this has now meant that people need to ask that question, you know, what's the difference between me providing an estimate on a questionnaire or what we call a sleep diary versus having a wearable? Now, the key difference is that you're going to need more time to be able to fill out a questionnaire or a diary. Yep. What we notice is that when you are wearing a wearable, that it's picking up movement. That's what it is. There's no brain in your wrist, and you need to measure the brain in order to sort of see when people are sleeping and what type of sleep. And right. People move around, especially, and it's really fascinating. We notice this happens in teenagers, that they'll move around and that boys will move around more than girls. But it's not picked up on their diaries. And for us, we don't care. Like, you know, when we're working with people with insomnia, their perception matters. And they're the people that have the greatest disparity of anyone. Like, we can actually measure their sleep overnight in their own home, and it might come back and they're getting 7 hours of sleep, and yet their diary says that they're getting five. And so clearly, yes, they're getting some objective sleep there, more than they think. They don't like you saying that. They say, oh, so you're saying this is in my head, I haven't got a problem. It's like, no, there is something going on, we can work with you. And the question is working with them, doing certain cognitive behavioral techniques to be able to sort of change that gap. And that's what happens with treatment. But even like we've even studied infants now with cameras above their cribs and noticed that boys are moving more than girls. But the parents won't necessarily observe that. And, you know, that's in some ways what matters is, you know, are the parents getting woken up by this sort of stuff? So as much as people are really getting into, you know, Fitbits and Garmins and all those sorts of things, yes, it can provide some sort of interest, but they're not necessarily as accurate as what people would expect. And I think when working with people that have or perceive a sleep problem, they want to improve their sleep, their perception matters, and those subjective ones actually come to the fore, and they're actually the priority, I would say, when it comes to working with them.
Definitely interesting. Yeah. Just because, you know, yeah, I did have that kind of experience in the past where I was working in StarCraft 2 with a couple of athletes. One was from Japan, one was from Korea. And they did have that kind of individualized mindset towards sleep. And, you know, when I kind of had a quick talk with them about their sleep, they were very kind of hesitant at first, just because I think they weren't too sure whether they wanted to, you know, what I wanted to hear essentially. But it's definitely one of those things that's very interesting that I've always thought about. Also, nearables. So what's the main difference between something like a wearable versus a nearable? And, you know, what kind of difference can we see in that?
Yeah, well, the technology is certainly different in some ways, because I guess with the Fitbits and so forth, they managed to pick up movement. So, you know, with these accelerometers that have been around since the, you know, early 1990s, now, the nearables are new technology and they're using different types of technology. So we find that that's actually quite fascinating as a breakthrough. And then hopefully we'll see these things, you know, really being more accessible to consumers. So at this present time, the validity of them, that, you know, when you compare them to EEG, some of these nearables are actually pretty close, pretty good at measuring sleep. One thing that we're looking at is another wearable, though, that some of these bands that people wear on their heads, and there are some of them that are coming through, again, looking like they could be quite accurate compared to what we call polysomnography, the EEG signals in the brainwaves, not only for when people fall asleep and wake up, but also the different types of sleep. And for us, we're going down a path because we're quite interested in REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep, is when you dream. But the interest for us is in emotion regulation, because as psychologists, we're also interested in this relationship between sleep and emotions. And when you're talking about teenagers and young adults, you're talking about depression. Depression is one of the biggest ones that comes through. And admittedly, you can get anxiety. But there are certain relationships between characteristics of REM sleep and also people's reports of depression, which are just incredible, because the correlations are huge. They're bigger than what we would usually sort of expect. And it really does go to show that, you know, you need to have good sleep but also good REM sleep in order to be able to not only process those emotions that you've gone through during the day, but also, like I've mentioned before, really prep yourself emotionally for anything that's coming up. And I think that's obviously key for, you know, this particular industry when you've got athletes that are leading up to comps, you know, and in their training to be able to monitor and be able to sort of regulate their emotions a lot better, even when they're training, is going to be crucial. So I think some of these wearables that are a close approximation to what we see in the laboratory, they probably hold a lot of promise, not only to provide an indicator of sleep and how we can change that sleep, but also REM sleep, and maybe looking at some of the things that we can do to sort of improve their REM sleep so that then improves their emotions.
Yeah, right. It's very interesting. I definitely love the kind of mindset in regards to that regulation, you know, being able to have that, you know, key amount of hours of sleep per night that can then lead to, you know, that kind of emotional regulation. You know, when we see that kind of sleep deprivation, for example, in something like students, then the next day they have an exam, do we see kind of one thing I was thinking about is, do we see a lower self-confidence? Do we see a lower self-efficacy? In regards to their generalized belief that they can then go ahead and do the exam. Say, for example, they stayed up late, they studied, then they didn't get, you know, only got 3 or 4 hours of sleep, they wake up, and then all of a sudden their generalized belief that they can do the exam is decreased just because of how much sleep they got.
Yeah, well, the good news is when you look at the studies that have gone, okay, let's look at an all-nighter, like not getting any sleep at all versus getting some sleep before you got to do some sort of exam or some sort of cognitive task. Any sleep is better than no sleep. So, you know, the all-nighter is not the best thing to do. And that's not pure. Like, you know, there are some studies that show no difference, but there are a number of studies that also show that if you get some sleep, you'll perform better, which makes conceptual sense to us because there's aspects of sleep, different stages of sleep, and REM sleep is also one of those that is related to really consolidating what you've learned and putting that into sort of like long-term storage so that you can basically access it later. And that's not necessarily just, you know, things that we're trying to remember. It's also procedural memory, you know, and that comes down to when you're moving your mouse and you're working on your keyboard. So I think that's crucial. But again, it's about the lead up to that. If you are chronically getting sleep deprived, sleep is related to, believe it or not, almost anything. So self-efficacy, absolutely. Your beliefs about your sleep and about the world, absolutely. So it's a case of really trying to manage that as much as you can over the long, like, you know, looking at the forest as opposed to the tree, which is the night before some sort of comp or some sort of exam.
Definitely. And I think another kind of aspect is concentration, being able to make sure that you are focused in, you are concentrated, especially for some of these esports athletes that are playing, you know, for example, League of Legends, they're competing at a best of five. The games can go on for such a long period of time. So, you know, some of these players can really develop that kind of cognitive fatigue just due to the sheer length that some of these players have to be hyper-focused in. And if they are chronically not getting enough sleep, you know, what kind of impact is that kind of stacking up that these players don't actually understand? Mm. And I think that's kind of crucial as well, what we talk about is the fact that, you know, some of these players might be doing this stuff, they might be autonomously performing, playing, sleeping, but they're not actually having that kind of idea is, you know, is X amount of hours having an impact on my performance? And they might be trying to, you know, change other things. They might be looking to, you know, their nutrition. They might be looking to their hydration. And they might be hyper-focused on other areas where they're not really ticking the baseline fundamental ones that everyone has to assess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be a real hard shift for them to sort of think differently because, you know, we talked about beliefs and their belief is that, you know, I can sacrifice some sleep. That's what they've learned for their own selves. You know, they're their own scientists. They've had so many times when they've been able to get extra practice in and seen the benefits of that and therefore sacrifice sleep and haven't really been aware of any consequences of that. Okay, they're a bit sleepy, have some more caffeine, you know, maybe have a nap or something like this. Yeah. You know, it was just one day. That's okay, that's looking at an experiment, but science is about repeated experiments. Like if you repeat that over and over again and again, look back at the forest and go, holy crap, you know, that month, that week was actually quite shite, you know, compared to another time when you're getting better sleep. So, again, I think it's going to come down to coaches. They're going to be the real agents of change here when it comes to being able to change the players' beliefs around that and really try to find that balance between the grind and getting enough sleep.
Yeah, definitely. I think, again, you know, as you said, it's that mindset that some players will always have. I've got to this stage, I've got to tier one esports by doing what's worked for me. So why would I start to do something different? And I think, you know, having that mindset is almost detrimental because, you know, suddenly there's a lot of other esports athletes that are starting to adopt changes. They're starting to understand, hey, my sleep's important, my nutrition's important, my exercise is important. They're starting to, as we talked before, get that mental edge, that 1% that kind of differentiates themselves between the other athletes. So I think when you have that kind of mindset that, hey, I don't need to really do anything else because I got to where I am because of what I've done, can be pivotal, it would be detrimental.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you know, if coaches are struggling to be able to sort of change the, you know, the mindset of the players around sleep, and they really think it is a passion, it is a priority, maybe they want to look at the gender of their team, because, you know, I'm going to probably put off some people here, but the girls listen more and they're more likely to change. That's what we've found in general, you know. And it might necessarily be that they have to change that particular gender balance of that team, but maybe even consider some of the like, you know, developing other teams that are just all female. I mean, it's starting to happen, and I think we're finding in general that the females are not only listening and they have more of an awareness about it, but they also are more likely to make those changes. So it'll be interesting, you know, see how this goes.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that, you know, in traditional sports, we definitely have that diversity. We definitely have different, you know, females competing in, you know, male sports and the opposite as well. But when you look to esports, there's not many female-only teams that I can really count on one hand. I know that there was previously a League of Legends team that was consisted of all females, but I think, you know, their performance was quite drastic, and I think that had an effect on other females trying to get into that scene because they thought, hey, you know, these people set that kind of baseline level. I won't be able to get to that level. But I definitely think as we start to adopt it, as we start to, you know, try and get increased adoption of, you know, female activity, it'll be definitely interesting because I think, you know, we have a lot of female streamers, so Twitch streamers who are hyper-focused in that area as well. And it'll be really interesting to see whether that kind of esports adoption for the female scene will start to become a lot more prevalent.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing I was also interested, so we talked a little bit earlier in the episode about South Korea and the South Korean athletes and that very instilled mindset on the grind. You know, as you said, they wake up, they walk to their computer, they do what they do, they're back to bed 18 hours later, for example. You know, StarCraft II is very an instilled culture in Korea and South Korea, and that kind of grind is so, so strong. And I, you know, read through some of your previous research, and you noted that, you know, many athletes, you know, they're young, as we talk about, that kind of teenage, early, you know, young adult, and they're lacking those key social skills. You know, what kind of impact is this going to have, you know, after they get out of gaming, after they make that transition out of the esports scene and onto real life where they're trying to find a job? Are they going to have those kind of fundamental baseline communication skills that they're going to be able to have?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question. And I guess as someone that does science, I mean, I can only speculate. You know, it's best always to sort of collect the data. And I think that's a really good idea is that, you know, what does happen to these guys, you know, post their careers? I mean, we do see that they obviously will go into sort of like the streaming services, but, you know, what happens after that? I think we're probably at a time where we start to, and we should really try to start to investigate that and follow these people and sort of see what happens post, because if we do understand what happens to them and what skills that they do need, that's another area that needs to be instilled, particularly for, I guess, a lot of your viewers. If we're trying to sort of get to those people that want to get into the esports scene, they have to be really aware of how they have to set themselves up the best so that they, like we've been talking about, finding that balance between the grind and being able to look after their physical, emotional health. And this is also another thing. How do you set yourself up as well so you're thinking about your career after your next career? And like, it's hard for us to predict unless we have data about it. And then, you know, you try to do science and then something like COVID-19 comes along and rips everything under you and you're going like, okay, now what do we do? And who knows? Like, this is the way that people interact these days. You know, it's through chat. It's through online. And I think this is obviously changed our world and the way we're sort of probably going to go. Who's to say now that these guys will be face-to-face and be able to have these sorts of interactions, and will it be detrimental to their future careers? We have no clue. It would have been cool if we started to investigate that and collect data before COVID hit, and then, you know, 10 years later, what happens in the next cohort? Does it really matter?
I think, you know, just touching on COVID there, I think because of COVID, we did see a quick widespread fast adoption of technology. You know, we saw teachers starting to learn how to use Zoom for classes. We saw, you know, other allied health professionals starting to engage in telehealth sessions more often. You know, whether it be for exercise, you know, it's a lot easier just to jump on the computer and, you know, load up the webcam or the camera and participate in an exercise session. You take away that travel aspect. So I think, you know, one positive thing that can come out of COVID is that kind of adoption of technology that was inevitable. I think it was inevitable that this would have happened in the future. And so I think we just sped up that process earlier. You know, and I think that on the other side, obviously COVID has had a big impact. Has it impacted any of the research that you were planning to do in regards to clinical work, in regards to, you know, teenagers, young adults, or even esports as a whole?
Fortunately, no. We were sort of thinking this way anyway. You know, we're sort of thinking that, you know, we live in Australia. My PhD student that's investigating this, Daniel Bonner, he's over in Perth, and that's like one of the most remote places, or you'd say, in Australia, because it's so hard to get over to the East Coast. You know, it takes ages, you know, similar to what happens, I guess, between East and West of the US. But when we were going to undertake this project as well, we were thinking, and this was back in, say, late 2018 or so, we were going, okay, well, if we're going to try to look at the sleep of esports players, we have to see if this is feasible. We have to see if we can actually get to these guys. And that's when I was starting to think about, okay, let's contact, say, my South Korean colleagues and some in the US. And I remember initially my South Korean colleague, she was like, what's esports? And and then she found out, I think, like her cousin was like, you know, knee deep in this sort of stuff, and, you know, with EA and so forth. And so we had to be online to do this. And I guess that's what we saw as the future. If we were, and you know, the evidence does show, we're foreigners when it comes to sleep health and sleep interventions for esports players. And if we were going to do this, we can't fly around the world. You know, it makes sense for us to be able to deliver our talks and deliver our interventions online. So it wasn't, we sort of planned ahead really when it came to it.
Yeah, fantastic. Probably coming into the turning off the gas and rolling down the hill now to the end of the episode, I definitely think we've touched on quite a large kind of spectrum of things that some of the viewers can take away today. I definitely know that there are a couple of players who are really interested about jet lag, so really touching on some of those key topics, burnouts, sleepables, and monitoring as well, and also the consequences of not having a proper sleep schedule as well. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Michael. For all those players listening who are looking to get into the professional scene, looking to take their current esports into tier one, what advice would you have for these athletes to kind of incorporate into their daily routine, and why should they do it?
Yeah, I mean, clearly you do need practice. You know, that has to be, you know, in all honesty, number one. You have to try to get in as much practice as possible. Hopefully these guys are now more aware than, say, those tier one teams and those that have already retired, how important sleep is, and trying to find that balance. And I think, you know, if you're going to be your own sleep scientist, look at the forest. You know, look at sort of periods of time when you don't sleep well, how does that affect your performance versus times when you get more rest? Caffeine will help to overcome some of your sleeplessness when it comes to in the morning. And hopefully think about your own circadian rhythm. You know, where is your peak time of your performance? Usually if someone has a normal body clock, they have a normal 9-to-5 sort of job, their peak performance, believe it or not, is between 6 to 8 p.m. at night. So for a lot of young people, their peak performance might actually be sort of 9, 10 o'clock at night. So be aware of where that zone is, so that you know that that's where you can get your sort of best performance. But also understand after that peak performance is when we're starting to come down and we need to get our rest. Be aware of where your natural sleep should start to occur, and do give yourself some time to sort of really wind down. You're going to need sort of strategies, sort of quick strategies. You're going to need to practice those in order to make that transition from, you know, gaming, technology use, and then sort of switching off yourself, I guess, and trying to, you know, get your rest.
Yeah, fantastic. Some absolutely crucial key takeaways. I definitely know that a couple of players that I've been talking to, having a chat with in regards to performance, can definitely take away some of those awesome things that we've talked about today. So I really appreciate you coming on today, Michael, taking the time to jump on and have a big in-depth chat in regards to esports sleep, but also touching on in regards to traditional sport as well, and also some clinical research as well. I think it was an absolute delight, and it was very awesome having a chat with you. For everyone listening, where can we find you on your socials just to get update with, you know, maybe some research that you're doing or, you know, follow you more?
Yeah, well, you can Google me, although, you know, I've been doing this for a while, so obviously there's a few sort of different websites. In terms of, you know, certain websites, we run a business on the side where we can provide services. So that's Wink Sleep Online. So you can just type in Wink Sleep Online and find us there. We've got a lot of different blogs on there as well, so people can educate themselves about stuff and they can get in contact with us if they want some sort of intervention work. We're more so on LinkedIn, so they can find me there. And we're also with Wink on Instagram and Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for jumping on today, Michael, and taking the time out of your day to have a chat with me and share some crucial key takeaways for some of our esports players and listeners.
Thank you very much, Lachlan. It's been an awesome conversation.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And as per usual, thank you very much for tuning in to the end of the episode. A really fantastic chat today with Michael, ripping apart some of the key crucial topics in regards to sleep for esports players, an area I'm definitely interested in, especially in regards to circadian rhythm and travel as well, and jet lag, and how that can impact a player's cognitive performance on the same day and also the following day. So hopefully a lot of players, coaches, and everyone else listening can take away a couple of key crucial aspects that can be implemented for yourselves and for your teams as well. Thank you very much. This has been your host, Lachlan, and I will see you in which one? The next one.